call.
This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, good morning and good Thursday to you. We got a throwback Thursday today, but one of our favorite athletes, if you want to call him that. But yeah, we got one of our favorite athletes in Throwback Thursday today. But this is the day we're talking about the Carolina Panthers in our NFC South preview. And we're going to talk about second acts, because we've seen quarterbacks in this league have second acts. Some of them have had successful ones. You think here where I live in Nashville, Ryan Tannehill, who never really caught on with the Dolphins. And yet when he got to the Tennessee Titans, it was just enough. A good running game, good coaching, good defense, little pieces in place that sort of helped him develop into a better quarterback, and a quarterback that could lead a team to a double-digit win season and also, you know, make it to the postseason. But that's what's on tap for Baker Mayfield. Now, when you look at second acts that have gone on to win Super Bowls, for example, you know, you think about two guys that are Hall of Famers, best in the game, who went on to other teams and won Super Bowls with other teams, Peyton Manning and Tom Brady. But you also could look at a guy like Trent Dilfer, who, when he was with Tampa Bay, was part of the sort of come up of the Buccaneers from a lousy team that was kind of mediocre and kind of at the bottom of their division in the late 90s to a team that was starting to really build something under Tony Dungy and then later with John Gruden. But Trent Dilfer never caught on with the Buccaneers. He wasn't a guy that they felt like in the end they could win a Super Bowl with. So out he went, and next thing you know, he's just manning the ship of an offense that is anchored by this amazing defense on the other side of the ball, and the Baltimore Ravens are winning a Super Bowl. And Dilfer won a Super Bowl at Tampa Stadium, at that stadium in his old hometown. But is that what we're talking about with Baker Mayfield? We're not talking about one of the greats of all time, and we're not talking about a guy that it was like Dilfer was sort of pushed out by the fans and the team, because in the end they realized he couldn't do it. We're talking about a guy that had supporters in Cleveland. He has a fan base in Cleveland that wants to know exactly why Cleveland went out and got a guy as controversial as Deshaun Watson. He's trying to get his second act with the Carolina Panthers. We will talk about that and whether or not he'll be successful. Matt Rhule is saying all the right things about a guy who is now the new, a guy that could be the new signal caller with the Carolina Panthers. We'll talk about that in our Throwback Thursday. And a good Thursday it is as we continue with Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
Yo, fellas, y'all ready to do this?
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
We're going back to 1991 on a Throwback Thursday this morning, as on this date, John Daly wins the PGA Championship at Crooked Stick in Carmel, Indiana. And we talked about this at the top. I said it was one of our favorite athletes. John Daly is one of the show's favorite athletes. He's had a controversial life. He's gotten in trouble. He's had problems with alcohol abuse, whatnot. He has met those demons. He has talked about those demons. He's a heavy gambler. But John Daly is his own man. And I tell you, he's one of those guys I just root for. I like John Daly a lot. I really like him a lot. And a lot of it has to do with the John Daly I remember back in 1991 when he won the PGA Championship. If you're not old enough to remember or not enough of a golf fan to kind of know his story, when we talk about a golfer coming out of nowhere, there is no better example of that than John Daly. There is no better example of this, because a lot of times guys will win a major coming out of nowhere because, you know, they show up at Augusta or they show up at St. Andrews or Winged Foot or whatever. And they just play well. You know, they've been at the grind for a while. You know, they're qualifying. They win a couple of things. And before you know it, you're like, oh, my God, Charles Schwartzel is a Masters champion. How did this happen? But John Daly's story is completely different. Nick Price he was one of the top golfers in the world. His wife was having a baby. and he pulled out of the PGA Championship, and it was being held in Indiana at a golf course called Crooked Stick. And so when that happens, you call the alternates. And then the alternates rush down there to play in the tournament. John Daly was an alternate. So they call him up and they say, Nick Price isn't going to be playing this week, and you're up. Come on over, Arkansas grad. And so he did. And he drove all the way to Indiana to play in the golf tournament. Barely saw the golf course. But he got Nick Price's caddy. And, you know, Nick Price wasn't using him. So he was like, I need work. I'll do it. So next thing you know, John Daly is playing in the PGA Championship, the fourth and final major of the year. Now, in 1991, we had not reached, just to give you, I'm not trying to geek you out here on golf history, but when Titleist came out with the Pro V1, it was a new ball that sort of managed distance and feel. So back in the 90s, you had Bellotta golf balls. Pros used Bellotta golf balls, and guys like me were using like Top Flight and Pinnacles. These were harder golf balls, but they went further because we needed the distance. But pros wanted control. So you didn't see a lot of guys bombing it over 300 yards back in the late 80s, early 90s. Even though technology with the clubs were getting there, you didn't see a lot of 300-yard bombs. You know, a couple of long bombers, Greg Norman could hit it a long way. A couple of other guys were known to hit it a long way, but, you know, but nobody liked John Daly. And so in 1991, here's this 25-year-old kid, again, graduated from Arkansas, went to Arkansas to play college golf, and he's crushing the golf ball. He's deforming the golf ball. I mean, the thing is flying a mile. He's outdriving everybody by huge distances. It was eye-opening. And again, this guy's, he's out of nowhere. He's got a mullet, country bumpkin look, and he immediately becomes a fan favorite. Immediately. Everyone's pulling for this guy. He's leading the golf tournament. But the one thing people notice as he's playing around in Crooked Stick, one thing they notice, guys can play. He's not just a long bomber that, you know, he hits it a long way and he has a little bit of an advantage because he's closer to the, he's got soft hands to make those delicate shots, pitch shots. He's chipping, he can chip, he can putt, and he just catches just the most amazing role that you can have as a professional golfer. And as the tournament is progressing, you know, you're waiting for him to fade because that's kind of the story, right? That's always kind of the story. You get these Cinderella guys coming out of nowhere. No one's ever heard from them. They're leading. But one minute you feel like they're just going to wake up and go, what the hell am I doing here? How did I get here? I'm actually leading a major. This is not supposed to be. And here comes the triple bogey. Here comes the back-to-back bogeys. Here comes the fall. Or here comes somebody else making a charge that's more likely to win a major than a guy out of nowhere no one's ever heard of. But not Daly. Daly goes on to win the major. He wins the PGA. And Madison Avenue can't get enough of him. He's an everyman. He likes beer. He likes Hooters. He's an everyman. He's the golfer every one of us was. And he's now a major champion. You know, when I was a kid and I played high school golf, but our high school golf team wasn't very good. But nevertheless, we would play in these state tournaments or whatnot, and you could always tell the country club kids. You could always tell them, right? They wore the shirt. They had multiple gloves in the bag. You know what I mean? They played great. And then there was guys like us. Like, we had a mixed match set. Some of us went out, and when we could get on the golf course in our home course, we're playing, like, first tee to the fifth hole. Like, we were just playing on an empty course, like late at night, try to hit it over trees, try to hit it over houses, you know, all those kinds of little sheds that were on the golf course. That was John Daly. John Daly reminded us of those kind of guys, like, you know, guys I kind of played golf with. So he immediately became famous, not just famous for winning, but famous, like beyond golf because of who he was. And it set up Madison Avenue, because they grabbed him, they put him on things, there was a video game, there was videos, instructional videos, everybody wanted to know how he hit it so far, everybody wanted to know, you know, grip it and rip it, and that was Nick Price's caddy, that was his advice throughout the whole tournament. He didn't care, he said to John Daly, just rip it, John, that's what he said all the time. Take that driver and rip it. Don't worry about placement. Just rip it. See that fairway bunker? That's meant for other guys. You're flying that. You're not even coming close to those things. Other guys have to worry about where they place the golf ball because they only hit it 280, 290. You're hitting it 320, 330. You're bombing it over that. And that's John Daly. But I think the John Daly story, and I think this is going to be a fun throwback Thursday, I think the John Daly story really happened in 95 when he won the British Open, because he wasn't just a one-trick pony. He just wasn't a one guy that won a major and then we never heard from him again or disappeared. Don't get me wrong. He had his demons, really had his demons. He had a gambling problem. He had an alcohol problem. There were plenty of times where John Daly and many of his ex-wives, the police needed to be called because neighbors heard a lot of ruckus, a lot of arguing, fighting, broken things. You know, he had a lot of demons to overcome. But as he's gotten older, he's always been that athlete that has been warm to the crowd, and the crowd has been warm to him. He is one of the most popular guys to this day. We just talked about it with the British Open. Daly, when they were doing the celebratory St. Andrews, and they talked about golfers who had won British Open at St. Andrews, he's one of them. He's one of them. He won at the Old Course. And I kid you not, he gets to go until he's 60, and he's getting close. But every time he goes to the British Open, it just as a celebratory starter, not competitive, but just playing because he gets to, they love him over there too. So when he's here, they love him, and over there, they love him too. So that's our Throwback Thursday today. But like I said at the top of the hour, we'll get to the Carolina Panthers. That's our preview today. And then a lot to preview with the Panthers, but I'll be honest with you. It's really going to boil down to a couple of things. Their quarterback, who is it going to be, and can Christian McCaffrey stay healthy? This is a playoff team in terms of its talent, but injuries have always plagued them, especially Christian McCaffrey. Injuries have always plagued them. But, again, with the extra playoff team, with the third wild card, if they stay healthy and they get good production at quarterback, they should be in the mix for that position. You know, maybe they need to win their last two games or something. They're not going to win the South. They're not going to be competitive with Tampa Bay. To be honest with you, maybe even New Orleans finishes ahead of them, but they still have enough wins to be in the conversation. But it all really stems from health. But as I was saying at the top of the hour, we're talking about a quarterback in Baker Mayfield that's trying to get a second act. But he's not trying to get the second act of a Peyton Manning or a Tom Brady, who left under different circumstances. Brady wanted kind of a new scenery, and Manning had that neck injury, and the Colts had to go on with Andrew Luck because that's the way the cards fell for them. They didn't have Peyton Manning for that one season. They had the worst record in the NFL. Andrew Luck was in the draft. They had to take the next franchise quarterback. So it kind of made Manning go on to somewhere else. But both of those guys went on and won Super Bowls. But we are talking about two of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. I look at Baker Mayfield like I saw Trent Dilfer. Baker Mayfield reminds me a little bit of his story. Trent Dilfer in the late 90s had the Buccaneers going towards the playoffs, kind of a surprise in 1997. But he was never an elite quarterback. And I can remember how when I was living down there at the time, dating my wife, and I can remember sports talk radio, the great WDAE in Tampa, Steve Dumig, the late Steve Dumig, used to go on the radio and complain about Trent Dilfer. Dilfer's got to do better with the ball. Dilfer needs to make those reads better. Dilfer is not the kind of quarterback we need. And I was thinking, boy, how quick Tampa Bay fans went from, we're just lucky if we're getting like 6 or 7 wins, to complaining about the starting quarterback not being able to win them a Super Bowl. It was that quick. And eventually, Trent Dilfer left. They just said, that's enough. They went to the playoffs a few times. They never made any movement. Brad Johnson was the one. John Gruden was the one. So the Dilfer-Dungy relationship disappeared. It was John Gruden and Brad Johnson that led them to a Super Bowl. But before that, it was Dilfer that went to a Super Bowl. He was on the Baltimore Ravens. But remember, Dilfer took over that job late. You know, there was a number of starting quarterbacks for the Ravens, and the Ravens' identity was an offense. It was defense. They won that championship with defense. If the Carolina Panthers are going to do anything, that's not the case. They're not going to win on defense. They're going to win with good quarterback play. And does Baker Mayfield have a second act? Right? Because the first act, wasn't bad, to be honest with you. I know the shoulder injury last year has caused the Browns to look at another quarterback. It was a non-throwing shoulder injury. Don't get me wrong. He wasn't trying to chuck it with the injured shoulder. But still, it was an injured shoulder. But Baker Mayfield that led them to the playoffs and got that win over the Steelers and had a competitive game against Kansas City before their season came to an end. All right, we'll talk more about that on Twitter, at Tunity Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. Enjoy the 1991 music today as we continue with Throwback Thursday.
Runs, please.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, 1991 Throwback Thursday on this date. John Daly wins the PGA Championship. So, man, 91 music. You think are we going to get any Vanilla Ice? Was he doing something back there in 91?
I think he was done before that. I think he was 90.
Was he done by then?
I think we were already pushing him out.
Was he? Yeah, exactly. Man.
So, is this song controversial? Is it controversial to play this artist right now?
Will Smith?
Yeah.
You
know, Smith, I like living on the edge.
Will Smith has been famous forever.
Ever.
Forever. Like, you start thinking about guys in Hollywood or music or whatever, and, like, I was flipping through YouTube or something, and there was 60 Minutes was doing something with Kiss on their final tour. I think it was 60 Minutes Australia. And I'm just thinking, can you imagine that? Like 50 years of, or the Rolling Stones, 60 years plus of being just a mega superstar.
That's why
constantly, every day, forever.
It blew me away when, I can't remember what I was watching, but Bono from U2 was on a talk show. And what blew my mind was the fact that he is married to the same woman he's all his life.
Yeah.
Like before he became famous, he got married to this high school sweetheart or whatever the equivalent is in Ireland. And he's still married to her to this day. And I'm like, God, I mean, you were a rock god.
Man,
not a star. You're a god.
He was probably the biggest one of I mean, when you talk about 80s, 90s, those early 90s, the Zoo TV tour.
Yeah.
They were, like, he was the biggest star on the planet.
Yeah. And I mean, but still to remain faithful because groupies were just throwing themselves.
Oh my God.
That's what they do.
It's crazy. I was talking about last week. I said that I watched the 1999 Woodstock documentary that's on Netflix.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I'm at an age where 99 Woodstock, I remember that going down, but I was old enough not to want to go do that.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I wasn't young, and I wasn't like 19. I was like, Woodstock 99, I'm going, man. Me and my buddies, we're going to drive all the way to New York. I was not young enough to do that. But when I saw the crowd, I was like these, you know, you're seeing like Fred Durst on stage. He could have done anything he wanted. He could have had those guys, that crowd, do anything he wanted them to do. Like, they were young, crazy,
but he's
delirious, and you're like, you control all of them.
But
you can make them do anything.
He's a perfect example of what you're talking about, because where's Fred Durst now?
Yeah, right.
He could be shopping in your grocery store. You probably wouldn't even notice him.
I agree completely.
But you know, like Bono. Someone like Bono, or like someone you said, Will Smith, who really, in my memory, is the first music artist that made that transition to incredible actor.
We kind of laugh at that, to be honest with you. When you have a music artist, and it doesn't matter what genre of music he's in, right? Rap, rock and roll, country, whatever.
Right.
Whenever they jump into acting, you're always like, okay.
Whatever.
Look at Justin Timberlake. He wants to act, right? And then they do good. Then they're good actors, and you're like, my God, how much talent does this individual have?
That's not, you know, save
it's just,
some.
It's unfair.
Save some for the rest of us. Come on, man.
Seriously, like, you're good at acting too? Like, you can act? And Will Smith, you're right. I mean,
I don't know if Mark Wahlberg is good at acting, and he may appear later on in the show.
Yeah, right.
Wink, wink.
Is Mark Wahlberg better? Was he a better musician, or was he a better singer, or was he a better actor?
That's
Which one
what? That's like a chicken or egg.
Exactly.
conversation right there.
But I think, and I'm not, this is not conspiracy theory stuff. I always hate when I kind of go down this road because I don't want people to think like I, but don't you think like in Hollywood, if you are that famous and keep getting role after role after role, someone's pulling the strings for you because they kind of own you a bit. They're like, no, you're going to do these movies for us and we're going to keep you a star. You stay in line. We'll keep the door wide open for you. Because it's amazing how people have, like, Will Smith has been in some good movies, but he has been in some bombs.
Oh, yeah.
Like, some real bombs. And yet, nobody blames him for them. And the movie studios keep going, nope, we are putting you in more movies. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. You're not,
even
you may
now,
not be the box office guy, but you still do it.
Even now, after all the, like I mentioned, controversy.
Exactly.
Heard around the world. And
right.
I guarantee, maybe not next year. Maybe he's a little like, well, let's give him a little bit of a break. But he'll be in another blockbuster movie.
Sure, sure. It's like, Tom Cruise is famous because it seems like whatever Tom Cruise is in makes money, right?
Right.
Like, he's done a couple where you're like Vanilla Sky, where I'm like, whatever, or Eyes Wide Shut. But for the most part, he's in Mission Impossible movies. He's in this new Top Gun movie that made $1 billion. It's going to go down as one of the most, I think it's past Titanic already or something like that. It's made a fortune, absolute fortune.
As it should. It was incredible.
So Tom Cruise has found the thing that makes him, he makes these movies. He knows they're popular. He knows they're box office gold. And he just has been in our lives since.
And there's a rumor out there, and I'm kind of excited about it. I don't know if it actually will come to fruition here, but. Do you remember the character he played in Tropic Thunder?
Yes.
The agent.
Yes.
Yeah, well, almost kind of like resurrected his career. Because remember, he went off the deep end a little bit, and we're like, okay, he's a little too crazy for us.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying it resurrected his career like, he had a disappearance like a Jason Bateman did. But there was a time where we were all like, oh, Tom Cruise and his wild antics. But he did that role, and we're like, oh, my God.
That's funny, self-deprecating.
Funny.
It was cool. It was a good.
There's a rumor that there's going to be a movie based on just that character.
Yeah, that's pretty good. That's pretty good.
I don't know if we need a full movie of it, but
yeah,
who knows?
But we talked about Cruise too. Like, I mean, those 80s movies where he was young, good looking, and they put him in these movies where he was awesome and he was awesome in everything. And then he kind of went. He transitioned into drama. He transitioned. There was Magnolia and those kind of movies where he kind of went and searched himself. Interview with a Vampire, which, by the way, is a TV show. It's going to be a TV show on AMC.
Is it really?
I don't know what they're going to do with that, but this is going to be a TV show. I liked him in that movie, though. I thought he was good in that.
Yeah.
He was good in that. But do you remember, there's a movie he was in that I think is underrated, but he played like an assassin. God, it's with Jamie Foxx.
Oh, the
Collateral.
Collateral, okay.
Yeah, Collateral.
I thought you were going to go with that Kung Fu movie or that
samurai
movie.
No. He plays an assassin that Jamie Foxx is a cab driver in L.A., and he picks him up. And the guy says, I got to go to these places. And it doesn't take long before Jamie Foxx figures out, uh-oh, this guy's not a good dude. And he kind of holds him hostage, right? He's like, you're going to take me to all five of these places. I got jobs to do. And they sort of have this adventure, if you will, But Cruise is menacing in this movie, like menacing. And he plays it really well. Like he's ferocious. He's ruthless. He's got no remorse. He's a real villain, real villain. But when did Cruise have his disappearance from Hollywood? Did he have it? I mean, did
no,
he have a period of time?
I don't think
out?
It was ever a disappearance from Hollywood. I think it was just a standoffish from people because, that was during the time when he was like dancing on the couch on
dancing
Oprah.
On couch,
and,
yeah.
You know, it was just like, okay, he's a little too weird now.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
It was like, should we still like him?
Hey, I'm all for loving your wife, but I'm not dancing on the couch on Oprah for you, right? I mean,
right. I don't even think he was married to her yet.
I think he was just infatuated with her, right? Exactly.
Just reminds me of that scene in Elf. Like, I'm in love.
I'm in love. Would you watch a movie with a young pool shark that Tom Cruise becomes a mentor toward? Like a Color of Money Part 2? Like where he plays the Paul Newman character?
Would I have to star Miles Teller now?
Yeah. Yeah, right. Yeah, That's right. All right, it's Wake Up Call. We'll talk Carolina Panthers next.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, we're going back to 1991 John Daly PGA Championship, winning his first major. Rosemarie on Twitter, you got to play some Pearl Jam. Yeah, I think we should have some Pearl Jam in 1991.
Was there?
Was there? I had the. I can't remember what year I had the 10 cassette. The 10
I thought
album.
That was later on. I thought that was that, like 93.
It's either maybe 92, but I think Pearl Jam was around in 91. We'll have to check our
I'll
list.
Check the Billboard
we'll see,
Top 100.
Rosemarie, but Pearl Jam isn't in the Top 100 in 1991. We don't go there, but we, you know, maybe we'll do a 92 version eventually.
I also try to do the, you know, those one-hit wonders, like Unbelievable.
Yeah, like
because you don't ever hear these guys anymore.
Well, who are they? Who,
EMF?
Oh,
the
EMF,
song?
That's right. Yeah.
Remember, they popped up and that was it?
That was it.
That was it.
That's all
just
she wrote.
One song.
Man, one-hit wonders, that's still lucrative, right? You still make a little money?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think we still get those checks? I still think we get some of those even today, where
yeah,
we get like, a one-hit, probably a little bit more now because you know, you use your music through TikTok videos or
whatever.
Didn't
we talk about this one time where it's like people are like, man, I can't believe concert tickets are so expensive. I paid $20 to see Elton John. And you're like... Yeah, but the music industry's changed. Like artists
paid $20 to see Elton John. Come on now.
Like it's like 1975 at Dodger Stadium.
Yeah. It's a minimum three figures.
Exactly. But my wife and daughter, they like to go. They like to look at concerts. Who's coming to Nashville and whatnot? It's always like $100-something a ticket. But concerts, and I remember going to a bunch of concerts in college. Like, hey, like I went to see U2. I saw the Zoo Station tour at Foxborough. I saw Eric Clapton. I saw Elton John. I saw a bunch of them in college. But tickets are really expensive. But because the music industry's changed, like streaming and royalties are not quite what they used to be. So, you know, that's where the artists make money. Robert on Facebook. Yes, Les Grossman. Really hope he makes
yes.
a movie about him. We need a full movie of that character. I agree. I thought he was the best part of Tropic Thunder. I thought
he was
so funny.
I mean, I love the whole premise of the movie is fantastic.
Oh, it's great.
It was one of those I didn't know what to expect going in when I first watched it. And then even when you're watching it, you didn't really know where it was going to go.
Right.
But, yeah, he was, I don't know, I mean, Matthew McConaughey was really good in that, too.
Matthew McConaughey was great. Here's what I loved about the movie. It took every Hollywood thing and made fun of it.
Yes.
Like, it took Hollywood and just said, this is a joke. Everybody who's involved in the entertainment business.
The whole thing was satire.
It's all satire. Here are these crazy actors doing crazy things. One's a method actor. Another one doesn't know what he's doing.
But he's beyond method.
Like, yeah, right. Beyond method. Right. Right. Exactly.
Has surgery to change his skin color.
It's all this. It's like every single Hollywood cliche you can imagine is just satire. It was great. It was so funny. Such a funny movie. So, yeah, I agree with you, Robert. Yeah, I hope they do because, you know, Cruise is going to be around forever. Cruise
is
going to be making – he's going to be making billion-dollar movies.
Will he, when he's 80 years old – because I know he'll be – you know, he is going to live forever as well as make movies. But when he is 80 doing a movie, will he run?
Right. That's a good point, right? Good question.
Do we want that?
Do we
want him running?
He would probably realize he could make fun of himself at 80 running the same way, trying to run the same way. That'd be great. I think Cruise has a little bit of that. He doesn't mind that a little bit. So, all right. So the Carolina Panthers are on our preview today. We are talking about the last team in the in NFC South week. Next week it's AFC South. Oh, that should be fun. We could talk about Doug Peterson and the Jacksonville Jaguars next week. But the Panthers, the last 3 years, 5 wins each year. So again. Got to change something, right? So that's what they did. They brought in Baker Mayfield to see if he could click with them like he couldn't quite click with Cleveland. Now, I will say this, and I said a little bit of this earlier. Andy Baskins, who comes on this show to talk about the Browns and really anything Cleveland, but mostly the Browns, he liked Baker Mayfield. He's in Cleveland. He's in the Baker Mayfield camp. He's not a big fan of this Deshaun Watson thing and bringing Deshaun Watson in. He was solidly behind continuing the growth of Baker Mayfield. There are people in Cleveland who feel that way. Cleveland moving on from Baker Mayfield was not something they had to do, right? He did play hurt last year. He did, again, non-throwing shoulder, but still an injury. They should have shut him down. They did not. And because of that, there was a feeling like, all right, this isn't the guy. We got to go get a better quarterback. And that's where they got Deshaun Watson. But they didn't just get a better quarterback. This isn't going after, you know, one of the top quarterbacks that's available or whatever. They went after one of the more controversial figures that we have in sports today. A guy, by the way, that is starting in the preseason game this weekend against Jacksonville, but we'll get to that later. So Baker Mayfield is out, right? You know, they don't even want him around to figure out what the Deshaun Watson suspension is going to be. They don't want him at all. But they waited, right? He could have gone to Indianapolis, didn't. Could have gone to a couple of other places, didn't. Atlanta went with Marcus Mariota. Indianapolis was able to get Matt Ryan. There was really only one spot, and that was Carolina. Why? Because Sam Darnold didn't work. The team that went after Sam Darnold and said, maybe you could click here. Well, he didn't click here. So Mayfield arrives, and what we're getting out of Wofford right now, Spartanburg, South Carolina, with the Panthers' whole training camp, is Matt Rhule saying all these awesome things about Baker Mayfield. And it shouldn't come as any surprise to anybody that he's probably going to win this battle. Because, again, when you have a training camp, sure, you'd like to see how a Sam Darnold developed in the offseason, but in the end, you just had a season where he wasn't the answer, right? He wasn't the answer. They tried Cam Newton again. That didn't work either. So I think P.J. Walker got some run at starting quarterback when Darnold was out. Nevertheless, they get it with him already. So Darnold had to show Matt Rhule even more than Baker Mayfield was going to have to show, because he had a lot of quote-unquote like damage that he had in the first year. So it's not that surprising. And by the way, Mayfield, to sort of use a sports cliche, is the shiny new toy. And the shiny new toy always sort of gets a little bit more attention. And so it's not going to surprise anybody when they open up the season against the Cleveland Browns, by the way, Baker Mayfield should be under center. But Carolina's better than these five wins. They're better. They have a better roster than a team that just wins five games. It's been injuries. And the key injury is Christian McCaffrey. Christian McCaffrey doesn't play full seasons, right? If you get an injury-free Christian McCaffrey, then this team wins enough games to be in the conversation. That's a big if, because he plays a position where he tends to get hurt. That's just the way it is. I mean, was there anybody more exciting in that final year of college football at that time than Christian McCaffrey was at Stanford? I mean, seriously. I mean, he was so electric and fun when he was at Stanford. And people immediately went, that's the guy you want, man. If he could get on an NFL team, look at all the things he can do. And he's done all of that. He's earned the big money. He's earned the big contract. He's gotten all the accolades. He's gotten the Pro Bowls. But he does come damaged sometimes. And that's the problem. So the Carolina Panthers, who, again, this is the main guy, if he's healthy, there's enough wins there. There should be enough wins there. But they didn't get good quarterback play. They didn't get a full season with McCaffrey. And that's why you get five wins. But let's go back to Mayfield for a second. Is Mayfield on course to have a Ryan Tannehill-like resurgence, where he's on a team where he's just away from certain coaches in certain situations? I don't know, because I think the Tennessee Titans, and remember, Tennessee Titans weren't that good when Tannehill arrived. They were, you know, Marcus Mariota had gotten them to the playoffs, but they were kind of an iffy team. But the Titans were building something. They built a better defense. They had gotten off the offensive line. You know, they had good running backs, and Derrick Henry was emerging, but I don't think that's the case in Carolina. I don't think Carolina is a good team that just needs a quarterback. There's some holes. They got a better offensive line. There's some things that Carolina needed to get better at. So I don't know if it's that kind of comparison. But if you're just using the general quarterbacks that are getting a second chance, quarterbacks that are using their new location to sort of get free from an old situation, that we might see a resurgence, or we might see a good run for Baker Mayfield here. Not sure, though. Not sure. right? We always knew Matt Stafford was an elite quarterback. You know, a good quarterback. Maybe not elite, but a good quarterback. Then he goes to Los Angeles, a team that was really built to win a championship, and he helps them win a Super Bowl. But that's not the case. No one's making that case with Baker Mayfield, right? We still are not really sure if he's going to have a long career, short career. Is he going to bounce around as a backup, and the next thing you know, you find him on a roster, and you're like, wow, I didn't even know he was there. I don't know. I don't know. But I know he had supporters in Cleveland. I know that his exit from Cleveland was not a universal, everybody's on the same page thing. Because, again, they brought in one of the most controversial players in the league right now to replace him. But here could be a new chance. And it really isn't trying to beat out a stellar group here. He's trying to beat out Sam Darnold. And again, this is a team and a coach that knows exactly what they have in Sam Darnold. So Carolina is going to be on the clock today. We'll talk more about their defense and offense as we preview. We also got the news again about Deshaun Watson starting that preseason game against Jacksonville. Is this a mistake for Cleveland to do that, given the circumstances that we are in right now with Watson? The Browns are basically saying to the league, until you decide on this, he's playing. We're going to get him in there. He hasn't played in a long time. We're going to give him a couple of reps, and we're going to put him in the game. And that means when he's in the game, it means there's going to be some eyes on him. So whatever you want to do, you better hurry up because he's playing this weekend. We'll talk about that some more as we continue. Your thoughts on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. Again, if you were around in the early 90s, you should like this Throwback Thursday. 1991, John Daly in the PGA Championship as we continue with Wake Up Call.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, we also should say later on in it, we're going to talk about the Mets today as well. So we got a full show. Yeah, look out. Are we going to curse them? I hope we don't curse them.
I hope so. I hope not.
Such a fun team, as we were talking about yesterday. By the way, I'm addicted to that trumpet. Intro,
yes.
Edwin Diaz. I'm addicted to it. I was listening to it again last night. It really is a goosebumpy thing. It really is. I don't know how he keeps his composure. I would want to run out of that bullpen if that was my entrance music. I would have a hard time staying cool and calm and collected walking out with that. I was addicted to that. It's great. God,
it's a perfect song to announce your arrival.
Yeah, exactly. And it seriously is. You expecting like elephants to be walking in and you on top of it?
Or him riding a bear.
And riding a bear? Yeah, right into the castle. Right into the town square on a bear with your army. Oh, God, it's great. But again, as we talked about yesterday, just to see the celebratory, I think this is the thing. I think that there are a lot of teams have these kind of moments where fans can't wait. They want to scream and holler and celebrate and dance and whatever it is that you do, whether it's Sweet Caroline at Fenway Park or other places that have sort of these things. And this, like, waiting for Edwin Diaz coming into a game must be great. He's coming into the game, you must be like, I can't wait.
I was watching a video yesterday. Pat McAfee was talking about it, and he hit it right on the head. His first question was, does this happen every night?
Yeah.
You know, because he's like, I need to see this. I need to get to a game, like, tomorrow.
Exactly.
And it's how I feel. It's like, I need to get to Citi Field now, and I want to see this. I want to dance.
I want to
jump up and down in the stands and, you know, watch Mr. and Mrs. Met.
Playing the trumpet.
Oh,
it's so cool. It's so cool. Do the Yankees have anything like this? No.
No, they used to.
Used to, yeah. Now but, they're and the thing is, home runs out of everybody.
Like McAfee said, too, which makes all, you know, put it perfectly, too. You have to back it up. It's one thing to have all the fanfare that's going on, but it's if you throw one pitch and it's, you know, crashed like 500 feet, it's like, oh, you know, great trumpets, you know,
no
whatever.
No doubt. If you're a batter and you are motivated to end this party, right? When you're in the on deck circle and Edwin Diaz is coming in and you got the trumpets and everybody's losing their mind, you're like extra motivated to be like, well, this one's going out of the yard. If I can get a hold of his pitch, I'm getting this one out of here.
But the fact is that he comes in there, I mean, and just mows people down. and he's throwing 100 miles per hour doing it. It's, come on.
He's got like 90-something strikeouts and 40-something innings. Like he's averaging like two appearance.
He's a closer. I mean, I don't think – that's what I was saying yesterday. I don't can't remember a closer that was this electric in a long time. You know, the last ones I remember were Mariano Rivera and Trevor Hoffman, who had great walk-up
Dennis
music.
Eckersley.
But it was just the music. Did Dennis Eckersley have good music coming in?
No, I don't think he did.
It's like as soon as you
heard
it.
That would be the 80s. I don't think we did that. I don't remember doing that in the 80s.
It's like Major League, you know, when Charlie Sheen takes – once you heard the music, you were like, oh, game's done.
Yeah, exactly. So I just hope we don't blow it for the Mets because they've got a special season right now. And look, they're playing better baseball than the Yankees right now. And that's the thing. In that city, they're playing better baseball. They're rolling right now. They just swept the Cincinnati Reds. The Yankees dropped 2 of 3 in Seattle. I think the Yanks have lost 7 of the last 8. They were swept by St. Louis before they went to Seattle. It's a road trip. These things happen. Sometimes you fall apart on the road, and then you get home and you regroup it. But they got to go. The Yanks are going to Boston this weekend to face the Red Sox. The Red Sox have it's a lost year for them. But imagine if they lost 2 or 3 to the Red Sox. It's not like they're losing their place in the American League or anything like that. But right now, they're not playing good baseball, and the Mets are playing great baseball.
And they're the talk of the city.
They're the talk of the city. It's a lot of a great buzz for what's going on. And
here's a quick question for you: what would you rather see, Aaron Judge hit a home run or Edwin Diaz enter the stadium?
Right? Yeah. And Aaron Judge has got 45 home runs. I mean, 45 hit one yesterday. So I mean, come on. All right, we'll continue. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio. Glad you can be with us here on a Throwback Thursday. We're celebrating John Daly as well on this date, winning the 1991 PGA Championship at Crooked Stick.